back. Hi, I'm Leather.
Hi, I'm Kurt.
And this is The Hotline. And we are resurrecting this radio program. What do we call it now? It's a podcast now.
It's a podcast.
That's the new thing. And we used to do this on what was called the radio back in the old
days. Radio, transmitted over the air,
right,
into cars.
Mm-hmm. We were like driving movies and things. Anyhow, we were on the radio and we had a show called
The Hotline,
which is what this show is called. But we stopped doing that like, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, 5 or 6.
And that was a little bit more scripted than what we intend here. But what we did was we talked about Portland food and we talked about our friendship and kooky things that happened. And
right. We laughed a lot.
Yeah, and there were like 7 people who really enjoyed it.
Right. Do we want to name them all?
No. Right.
Okay.
It's embarrassing, but most of them were related to us in one way or another. And we got this opportunity, thanks to TalkCast PDX, to try again. And we feel like, well, some shit's happened.
Yeah, lots happened. And we talked back and forth about doing this again, almost exclusively for relationship therapy.
Exactly.
Because we've known each other for a very long time.
How long?
Well, we met in 1982. So, yeah, that long.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. 39 years.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a long time. So it was great to just chat through things and on public radio.
And subject people to that. Right. To our personal therapy.
Yeah. And so, you know, COVID hit. And kind of completely upended the world that we were talking about in a way that felt pretty unique to Portland. Everybody got hit, but somehow, you know, the shrapnel here in Portland is more damaging or more impactful. So it just seemed like a fun time. It seemed like an appropriate time to come back and talk about it. I mean,
appropriate, yes. Also fraught. I think we are in a different landscape. I think we're looking at a completely different place. And I was kind of joking the other day, what if we had done one of these sort of in the year 2021 hotlines and we were still on the radio and been like, okay, well, what if this happens? You know,
right.
Just completely fantastic, over the top madness. I don't think that we could have forecasted any of the madness. And you're right, I feel, and of course we're here in Portland, so we feel the effects more keenly, but I don't think you're wrong. I think that, the pandemic, yes, affected us significantly, but it also kind of exposed some fragility in our city. And I use that word in a couple of different ways because one of the things that you and I, as middle-aged, privileged white men, are recognizing is there is and should be some fragility to that. So we are now also navigating the fact that this is a different climate.
Right.
And we are looked at with suspicion.
You and I as white guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I'm not sure if it's fragility or just awareness, right? Like we should be aware and conscious and conscientious of kind of who we are. I think that's definitely been driven home in the last, you know, several years. I mean, I went to one of the most liberal colleges in the country, and so being made aware of that is something that I feel like dates back to the 80s for me.
Right.
Because it was, you know, that it was PC before PC. But I think as a town, there's a reckoning that's come about. There's underlying weaknesses in the food scene here that made us disproportionately dependent on outside travelers and on outside money. So that exposed us to a lot of damage. But I think there's lots to talk about, and so it felt appropriate to kind of reboot this thing.
Well, here we are.
Yeah.
And we're booting.
We're booting.
Wait, is that a good thing?
No, that means throwing up.
Okay, so we're rebooting.
Rebooting, yeah.
So that's eating.
Yeah.
I think we've got a treasure trove of things to talk about. I do want to touch on a few things that maybe happened before all of this blew up. Like, was Cora even born when we were doing the hotline?
My daughter is, that's right. She was not born. at that point.
That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, she's pretty funny, and we really enjoy each other. So that's
she
a big deal.
She is funny. She gives me the business.
Yeah, she's very danger-oriented, so I appreciate that.
And your wife does.
Yes, my wife loves the danger. and, oh, my God, I mean, so much.
Yeah, look, my children are 17 and 15.
Ugh.
So smelly.
So hairy.
Hairy.
I can't believe how hairy Rye is.
And he is legitimately...
a beefcake.
A monster athlete.
Yeah.
I'm so proud. And I try not to be that guy.
Yeah, but I heard that Charlotte is on varsity basketball.
As a freshman.
As a freshman.
That is tough on
her
brother.
No big deal. No big deal.
Tough on her brother. Anyway, the other day he said, you know, Charlotte's more of an in-game player. I'm kind of a practice player.
Whatever.
Whatever. Your sister's just kicking your ass.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that.
And my stepson now is 16 and about to drive, so kind of terrifying. Yeah, watch out. I'll post on the website his physical description in the car he drives so everybody can avoid him.
I saw Tommy, Kurt's stepson, during the pandemic, and he was appropriately teenagedly nonchalant, and he, you know, looks at me, he's like, "What's up, Leather? It's been a minute." And it was everything that I could do.
And his bangs. He's grown out his bangs to be just below his nose.
I just punch him in the neck. I think I might have bit my tongue and drawn some blood.
Oh, man. But I got to say, that look of the really tight shorts and then kind of the high socks and the Nikes and then the hair down to the nose, that's a great look.
Look, you are just, you're essentially dating yourself as an old coot.
I just don't understand what these kids are doing these days with their hair and fashion.
Oh,
and
some things are timeless. You just got to admit, as you get older, you understand.
Yeah,
that.
You don't. You just, what are these kids doing? I mean, there's plenty of times when I'm like, Charlotte, those are in-house shorts, right? We're gonna keep those in the house because you're not keeping anything else in.
Oh, God. But to go back to one thing you said is, like, predicting the future, I distinctly remember, just you saying that makes me remember, I think it was Portland Monthly asked me, just not that far before the pandemic, what 2020 was going to be, right? They always ask every year, you know, what
Did
are the
you
trends?
Say a shit show?
No. Well, the trends, and I was like, the emergence of Portland as one of America's great drinking towns. I was sure of it because
You're not wrong. Well, plenty of that happened in 2020.
I just didn't know it was going to be alone in our houses.
Right.
Right. Actually, my wife now calls if I bring her home a regular fifth of any booze. She prefers
handle.
She prefers either vodka or tequila,
right.
But she calls those airplane bottles, the fifths.
Right.
So she's quite disappointed when I come home without the handle.
Sure. Not only is it a better value, but it's certainly considerably more liquor.
I would have never have thought that any kind of social pandemic would make me question why there wasn't a larger bottle available at the liquor store.
I'm sure Costco is looking into it.
So what are those called? Nebuchadnezzars? Is that what the really big wine bottle?
I think the way to go would be like an amphora, something with a strap, you know, that
right
had
on your shoulder.
Mezcal and you're toting it around. I like that. You know, that's exactly what the clothing industry did as well. Their mediums are now, or their larges are now mediums. Everything went up,
right?
But the numbers went down. So yeah. If you were a medium and didn't change, now you're small. But most people jumped a size. They don't want to be reminded of that. So I like that airplane bottle, and I think that'll probably catch on. I hope it doesn't catch on in airplanes.
Right. No, well, that's illegal.
Right.
Is it
really?
It's illegal to bring your own alcohol onto the onto your airplane. And now, in fact, I was just having a conversation with Portland International Airport because
Little name drop there. I like it.
Well, wonderful, wonderful organization.
Nice. Support of
Portland.
Brought to you by the Port of Portland.
And they now, with cocktail to go rules about to get finalized, in many states, by the way,
right?
A full license, so a restaurant at the airport can now sell to a guest a sealed cocktail.
Got it.
That they are now legally allowed to open by themselves off-premise.
And I've also heard that, you know how you get a pre-check?
Yeah.
I think you can apply for a bottle service permit and then just bring your own and garnishes and then just make drinks.
No.
That's not a thing?
No, that's not a thing. But you can. There's a lot of concern now because if you get your to-go, cocktail to-go, right. Or there's even rules coming through. Right now, if you sell somebody a growler in Oregon or a can of wine, they can leave with it, but they can't open it themselves on premise. But they are allowed to go off and open it. So yeah, now with these change of rules, everybody can be drinking theoretically while waiting for their flight to Las Vegas.
What is this, New Orleans?
Yeah, well, I hope so. I think some of the great things that could come about from the pandemic is a permanent loosening of liquor laws. We already have, I'm going to brown nose a little bit here, but it is true, the greatest liquor licensing division in the country, OLCC, they are the most pro-business, awesome organization to deal with. Sorry, did you fall asleep?
I'm trying. Go ahead. No.
Sorry about that.
OLCC, yeah, I'm listening. No, this is awesome.
They truly are. They're pro-business. They come and help. And
talk more about the bottle service pre-check that they're working on, that program.
But it's not a real thing.
But if you said the OLCC is a great company and a great organization, so we should, don't
encourage
you think that would
be...
Because I think it also
would be guys like on roller skates zipping around.
I love
like
that.
Ouzo
it's
bottles.
Sort of that old sort of cigarette style thing, but they would be on skates and they would be loaded down with citrus and other garnishes.
All right.
And there'd be a guy, and they maybe could have superhero personas like the Muddler.
Well, I like to imagine them like the one man band.
Uh-huh.
Remember at Saturday Market,
oh, sure.
Where he had like the drums with the legs and the cymbals.
But they're just selling you the things because, of course, you're making your own drinks on the plane.
Right. But again, that gets into federal rules. You can't do that.
All right. Well, we'll set that aside.
Right. Well, let's talk. We'll chat with the OLCC
after
this.
We're going to table that. and so let's bring it back around to the current. Oh, wait. Hold on. I did also want to mention that I had my 15 minutes are over, but they were awesome. I did that show on Netflix about weed.
Oh, yeah. How many episodes?
6.
Right.
And then they pulled the plug.
Right. But a great 6 minutes.
Oh, not 50. Oh, because there's more. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, it's great 6 episodes. Excuse me.
Oh,
that's
okay.
What I meant.
Oh, no, the 15s are done. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you've done like 7.5.
Of it? Half of it. Okay.
Oh, yeah. You got another. You're
at
not even
six.
Halfway through. And by the way, on that show, how did they make your hair look so full?
Smoke and mirrors. No, I was. I miss so much that pampering. Like, I have a much keener understanding for the grooming rituals of primates now.
Right.
Because they would cut the cameras, and these ladies would scurry over, and one of them had a fan, and she'd put the fan on me, and the other gal would, like, touch me up, you know, and I'd have some smudges in my made-up hair out of chalk or whatever the hell they were using. And she'd be like, okay, more hair here. Oh, God, I miss that so much.
Did it look like Stephen Miller? Remember when he went on a CNN?
Oh, no, it wasn't quite like, that bad. No Rudy Giuliani moments, just weeping down my face.
Well, one thing I appreciate about you going through that experience, and one great part about being such old friends, is when we box together frequently, and we stand side by side, and there's a pot, that, what do you call it, like a online app we watch called Fight Camp. Which we love.
We're looking for sponsors.
And one great thing is that every now and then you'll look over at me and act like a groomer and come over and see hairs growing out of my ears and rip them out.
That's 39 years of friendship.
And
right
I appreciate
there.
And you ripped out one the other day that I was shocked at. And it does make me question what my wife is doing.
Well, she's certainly not looking at you.
Right.
because, Christ, yeah, no, you looked horrifying. It was just... It was. I don't know what happened.
But how could it get that big?
How could it grow out of the side of your ear? That's
right.
The thing about life is I spend most of my time taking care of the hair that grows in the places that I don't want and lamenting the hair that doesn't grow where I do.
And it really has come on strong.
Oh, whew.
Oh my God.
I remember my dad had hair growing out of the tip of his nose. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you?
I agree.
What
right
in the
off
world?
The tip. And it's just like.
And guess what? You've got that.
I do not. I've never had hair.
Okay. All right.
When you rip one out of the tip of my nose, then it's cemented.
Then it's
our
over.
Friendship forever.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, yeah.
That's like a blood bond?
Oh, God. Could you imagine the embarrassment you'd save me? Ooh. Already, the thing is like an inch and a half growing on my ear, and you rip that out.
How long does that take?
I feel like they're like super hairs. They like pop up. They're like bamboo.
So just, like, it's a time-lapse thing. You could set a camera and be like...
Yeah, it's like a day and a half.
Anyway, so we're doing a show about Portland food.
Right.
Because we have deep roots in it. We're both from this city, which is unusual. We recognize and appreciate and value the kind of darling status of Portland in the national community. And that, and I know we promise not to say nice things about one another. Every once in a while, that'll happen. I think you've had a great deal to do with that. But as we referenced earlier, there were some real cracks. And our downtown is suffering inordinately right now. We're going to get to that. But our kind of, our plan, our frame for the next few episodes, dozen episodes, was really to kind of delve back in to the last year. Because not only was there insane global upheaval, but there was a very specific kind of chain of events and seismic events in the Portland restaurant community that we think deserve some plumbing, right?
Yeah, every town suffered from COVID. Every food scene suffered. But Portland suffered more. And I was talking to who I consider the best food critic in Portland, and he was telling me about a former food critic that had moved away, calling him saying, "What the hell is going on in Portland?"
Right.
And I think that's the general consensus, is just, all right, we know it's bad in wherever, you know, Kansas City, Miami, but what is going on?
Like, yeah, we've had some, I think a lot of people titans, are sharing that.
Some titans of this scene that have gone. For instance,
name check, go.
Well, you have a wonderful memory of you introducing me to Pock Pock in 2006.
Right.
I was about to go to business school. I had been living in France for a long time. And you and our mutual friend Jeff Cerciello, who was still with Thomas Keller at the time, you took us there when it was just the shack.
Mm-hmm.
And then subsequently introduced me to Andy, and that was the beginning of my return to the Portland food scene. So thank you, by the way.
Nice, finally. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
15 years later. But he has elected to shut down.
Yeah,
Pock
that was
Pock,
a big deal.
And has sold the building.
Sell the brand? Will
no.
Pock Pock live?
I think it's a TBD, you know, but he's held on to it. He's had quite a few offers, and I'm personally very glad that he hasn't accepted them. But that is truly an end of an era. Because in my mind, we had, what was Naomi's restaurant group, Ripe?
Something like that.
So they had a huge amount of coverage.
The G was silent.
Oh.
See what I did there?
That's great. And so they had a lot of coverage, and Times covered them.
Yep.
And so that was a big deal. And then, but, you know, Andy with Pock Pock, in my mind, really was the arrival of Portland on the national scene.
Yep.
There was a Food and Wine. It must have been an 11-page spread just on 11 pages. Full color. They brought a crane that went above the restaurant to take these aerial photos back before drones. And it was remarkable. And, I mean, just everywhere nationally. And culminated with him being on an episode of Anthony Bourdain where they each got a tattoo in Thailand. But that was really the arrival in my mind of the Portland scene on the
right.
national level. Like, something exciting is happening.
Well, but then as we are wont to do, and I know this isn't everywhere, but it does feel somewhat specific to the food community. There is an inevitable tearing down, and then so we saw Andy go through the gymnastics of having to explain being a white person cooking authentic Thai food. And that was another, that was sort of a precursor to what we ended up then seeing in the pandemic, just to get back to our kind of cyclical theme of how we're going to treat this. We saw some major explosions in people talking about the culture.
Yeah, and even recently, there's more conversations going on about appropriation in food, cultural appropriation in food, and we'll visit that at some point. I can't remember what the chef was, but talking about a group here in Portland, not kindly. I would have to go back and read all that, because, man, the arc of that conversation over the last 5 years is bonkers. And it definitely hit the accelerated button in COVID. Talking about the people, I mean, major pillars of our community here, most recently, Jose Chesa, who is just one of the most wonderful people you could ever meet, and truly a remarkable talent. The kind of chef that he would be cooking, and you'd come to his restaurant, and as you would get up to leave, he would sprint from the hotline where he cooks,
right,
and run to the door to open the door for you to say thank you, and then run back to the kitchen. So Taula was this just remarkable restaurant.
Talk about hand washing.
About hand washing?
Like after he did that door bit.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
You think so?
But I'll tell you, the hand washing conversation has changed in COVID.
Nice segue. Oh,
just because every time I get home, my wife is asking me, have I washed my hands? It's like, Jesus, yes.
Feel these sandpaper mitts.
Yeah.
Ask me again. So we've got people shutting up. I'm sure we will have a little bit of time to talk about the Big Bowl.
Right.
And that empire, because woo, that was a real juicy bomb.
Yeah, a lot went on there.
We had everybody talking mad shit about
each other.
It's like, well, we got some time on our hands. Let's get let's get bashing. What the hell happened there?
I think if you'd asked, at least publicly, we all talked about Portland's restaurant scene being a collaborative community, and that collaboration, there was some dark underbelly there that we didn't quite know about, or would suggest that there was a lot of pretending going on about how collaborative it really was, but we can go more into that. And the thing is about the last 14 months is that it feels like 3 years. When I was I had a Facebook reminder about my wife's birthday, and I was watching her blow out candles, and I was looking at the house that we were living in. It was a rental. And then I looked at the thing, and it said, a year ago.
Right.
I was like, no way.
Yeah.
No way that's just a year ago. That's at least two, and I had to kind of go through it. I was like, Jesus.
No, it feels both like a minute, Tommy. Yeah, you hear that? And 10 years.
Yeah, it's been a slog. But as a result, there's lots of fun things to talk about.
Jesus.
And but it requires kind of going back in time. For instance, we look at March when the pandemic came out. We, for instance, had opened a restaurant with a remarkably talented couple, Sean and Jamie King, who moved here from Vegas.
Yep.
Where they had worked at important restaurants, Momofuku in Vegas.
That's going to be on his tombstone.
And long live Sean and Jamie. And
I don't mean now. I mean, just every time that Sean came, it's like, Momofuku. That's what I'm saying. That'll be like,
yeah, but I mean, if you were like, yeah, if you were personal buddies with David Chang, that's pretty cool.
Heck yeah.
But he came and we opened a restaurant 4 days before we had to shut everything down.
Yeah.
And so in any case, what was it, 17th or the 18th of March, last year? And somehow we just didn't know. And we saw all this stuff happening in China, and then we kind of saw it arriving in Italy, and we're like, oh, they just don't, our public health system, I guess.
They just don't wash their hands.
Right. we've got it on lockdown compared to those disorganized countries. And then all of a sudden it hit, and it hit pretty furiously. And you think about the month of March, it was just full on chicken with the head cut off, running around in circles, trying to figure out what the hell to do. Is everybody going to go bankrupt? Will people go out again? I mean,
it was the timing was absolutely impeccable, because that's sort of like the month before things kind of open back up. You've made it. You've just had Valentine's Day, which is like the only kind of late winter restaurant pop.
Right.
You know, but people are starting to wake up. Everyone's getting excited, and then.
And I was talking to a major public health official, wonderful guy.
Who will remain nameless.
At the time, this is in April, and he was saying, I am positive that we will be fully reopened by July 4th weekend.
It's a magical thing. The sun will come out, and it'll
But that's
be...
what we kept saying, right? It's going to be like the flu. Everything's going to go away. The bottom line is that from day one, we haven't known how to manage it. We haven't known what it is.
Let's not go down this rabbit hole, but you're darn right. It was a shit show, and it was a slippery eat.
Right. But I think everybody certainly in this city has been, almost without exception, a good actor.
Yep.
We have it's important for us, and we recognize how important it is that people feel confident in our commitment to everybody's safety.
Right.
We knew long term, I think intuitively from day one, that the restaurant scene here would not make a comeback if the Portland diners didn't believe that we believed or had a commitment to their safety, and our employees needed to know that we were committed to their safety and would sacrifice money to assure their safety. The one thing we didn't plan on is that, in that vein of people feeling safe, is that we needed to make sure that our guests felt safe outside of our restaurants.
Right.
And that's really where the downtown Portland scene has taken a massive punch in the face.
Yeah.
Is that the homelessness that has been there. I mean, when we opened our very first restaurant in 2008 in the heart of Old Town Chinatown, there was already a problem there.
Right.
And that was kind of localized. You know, we had homelessness, yada yada. Like any big town, it just kind of turned into something bigger. The problem that Old Town had as early as 08, way before that, in fact, just kind of came everywhere.
Right.
Kind of came there all the way westward into, or southward, excuse me, across the center of the city. And that has just, you know, given people the weebie-jeebies.
Well, I think it's real easy to hold a certain set of, in Portland, I would say, liberal values, until they're on your doorstep and you're forced to confront them. And that's when, you know, it's like, oh, you're hemming and hawing, and how are we going to reconcile what we need to do for the public safety with what we say we believe for the community and rights and et cetera. But this is, again, dusty stuff, and I think we should get back to the kookiness and hilarity that our show is sure to bring. And wrap this up by talking about some of the giveaways, some of the trips we have planned for you, and also some of the games and special guests.
Oh, yeah, okay, yep.
Who
I heard
you,
about
who
that.
Would you,
I hadn't
about,
heard about the first three things.
Well, the
but
first
the guests,
three things
I,
are in development.
Okay.
Yeah, no, don't worry.
Will you tell me about
There'll definitely
that?
Be games.
Will you keep me
there might
on
be
that?
Trips. I'll let you know when things arrive.
Okay.
It's a need to know, TBD.
Okay.
Right?
And that's that side of the table?
I got that.
R&D is over there. Okay.
I got it over here.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. You just do the funny. You just bring the pretty. Come on. As Terry Crews says, what does he say?
Bring your A game.
Nobody wants to see your B game.
Nobody.
I mean, bring your A game is one way to say it. Yeah. But the better way to say it is...
Nobody wants to see your B game.
No.
Ever.
And if you could see into the radio, you would see... that both Kurt and I are, like Terry Crews, bouncing our pec muscles. And mine is kind of a wave of fat on top of the pecs. But Kurt's doing some bouncing.
You have a nice undulation.
it's
very
like
smooth.
A waterbed.
It's
when
waterbed.
We were young, it was very fashionable to have a bed filled with water. Remember?
I slept on one once.
Awful.
Well, what was nice, though, is that you could heat the bed. So in the wintertime, I slept once on a waterbed, I think in college. And
not
was,
much sleeping, right? Right?
No, there was lots of sleeping.
Oopsie.
But it was warm. I'd never slept on a warm...
But what if they were treating you like that frog, where while you were sleeping, it was just going up a degree?
Oh.
And you woke to like 120 and you were gently poked.
Huh. Yeah, I've never worried about that scenario. Yeah.
We will also give away a waterbed on episode 72.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, and it'll have a very kind of ornate headboard and some duct tape for patching.
Yeah, that sounds romantic.
Yeah.
This is great.
Okay, so I want to have, if I could pick any guest anywhere, I would pick Peter Cho. Do you know that guy?
Yeah, I do.
He has a restaurant called Han Oak off of Sandy.
Yeah.
And a new restaurant called Tanuki. Is that it? No.
Tuki? No, that's Janice.
Toki.
Martin's. Toki.
That's it.
Yeah.
And he is a darling of that, the guy who is a street cleaner, or maybe he does, I think he does construction work. Gary something.
I'm drawing a blank.
The
I have
foodie,
no idea.
Gary the
foodie. Oh, Gary the
foodie. He's a, I think he, by night.
He does not do construction
by night,
work.
He's a foodie, and by day, he works, he's just mobile. And he goes to construction sites. He's like, you need a break? Let me take the sign. You didn't know that.
What?
Yeah.
I thought he was like an investment banker.
That's his cover.
That's his cover?
Yep. But in actual fact, and he knows all those positions. He can do the slow. He can do the yield sign. He even does some hand waving.
This is one of the dumbest bits ever. What are you talking about?
They're the not all gold. All right, so people have Peter, maybe, and we got to have Rick Giancarelli, because
Giancarelli.
Know that Rick does a nasty impression of me, and I insist that he come on here and lisp.
There's away. A lot of great personalities, and I think that one key reason to get people in here to talk is I think one of the great parts of our food scene are the personalities.
Yeah.
You know, and Peter, that guy is just, you know, he's just a riot. And Rick is a riot.
Yep.
You know, there's so many great people in this town that make the food scene so fun and silly and dangerous. And I think that's what was different about it.
Would we ever want to bring somebody in that was sort of prickly and not really fun to talk to, just to kind of work them over?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. But I mean, you know, we're trying to stay positive. But I do know from other food scenes, you know, the ego, if you have an ego, and let's put Micah Camden aside, but if you have an ego in this town, you basically are taught to hide it, unlike other food towns, big food towns, where it's okay to be puffy, New York especially. You know, you take pictures of each other or yourselves in a big suit and on a gilded, you know, bench, you know, when you're talking about your own restaurant group. It's just like, that's not Portland. You know, Portland is about kind of quirky, fun, personality-driven places where it's kind of unexpected. And that's how we became interesting for food travelers.
Do you think that is still true, or do you think that that's the artifice that people try to maintain, and that's where you get the disconnect in terms of things like the notion of community versus the reality of community?
I think it's real. So, personally, just, you know, you know so many of them, and I know so many of the chefs and, you know, bakers and everything in this town. And I think genuinely there's just kind of an enjoyment of our industry and an enjoyment of one another.
I feel that way, too. I think I was trying to get that out, make sure that we were on the same one there.
Yeah, I just, you know, this, you see almost anybody in this industry and you're genuinely happy to see them,
right,
and want to talk to them. There's probably one or two exceptions, but... You know, it's a great town. It's a great food scene, and hopefully one thing that Hotline will do is kind of humanize, you know, our city and on the food scene side, because it's really taken a beating nationally from a PR perspective about kind of being a city full of lawlessness and a fertile dirt and yuckiness, which is such a bunch of baloney.
Right.
And it would be nice to have people realize, you know, we're kind of being held captive right now by 50 knuckleheads that run around breaking things at nighttime, but it's actually a great town. And,
yeah, I think we are smooth, we are creamy. I mean, speaking of which, I would love to have Carmelo Anthony on the show.
Yeah, here's a subtext that everybody should know that's listening. Is that we are hardcore Blazer fans.
Hardcore.
I mean, to the extent where we have a text thread with all of our, well, really all,
yeah,
of our,
leave this alone. Don't, yeah. We want to keep our cred. We want to keep our cool. We like the Blazers. It's cool. And Carmelo Anthony, in addition to being a massive sneakerhead, is quite an enophile.
Yes, he is.
So we could talk about wine.
Quite a fan of Merlot.
Yeah, well.
Or he wears Merlot colored sweaters.
Yeah, I think he likes all the reds.
Yeah.
You know who liked Merlot and who used to like Merlot and who dated someone who we went to high school with? And now I'm establishing our Portland bona fides, our Blazer bona fides. Charles Barkley. Coke and Merlot. Elaine Rohr.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Thanks. Name check, name check, name check. We got to, I mean, and on that high note, do you want to take us out with something? I like your half full kind of approach. I like the way that you bring me back and say, no, this is going to be positive. I believe the best. So why don't you like give us something uplifting?
Oh, Jesus.
Take us out and remind people that we're going to get better.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I can do that. I mean, especially not on the spot, but here are things that are true. We love Portland.
Okay.
Right? We love the food scene in Portland.
Also true.
We love hanging out together.
Mostly.
And as a result, you know, those are three things that I think will make this a fun thing to listen to. And we hope to remind everybody what a truly special place Portland is as a food destination. And that it's something, not only do we have a wealth of resources that any town in America is jealous of, right? Just in terms of everything around us. We have the best craft beer scene. We have arguably the one of the best wine regions in the world. We have one of the best craft baking scenes. We have some of the best distillers. I mean, we
dispensaries.
Dispensaries.
Makers. So, crafts people. They're right. Doers here.
We just have an underlying advantage over.
I agree. I think the recognition of the raw materials is relatively new, unfortunately. When we were very young, I don't think that the food scene appreciated, and I don't think that the diners appreciated the wealth of local ingredients.
Right, but credit to the wine industry, mm-hmm. credit to the beer industry, to the baking industry, which really all preceded Portland embracing the excitement of food. And so hopefully as we talk through it and we talk through the struggles we've been going through as a city, that'll resonate with people. And hopefully we'll have great guests on the show.
And we're going to also make it possible for people to interact with us. If they want to give us the business, or if they want to make some suggestions, or if they want to come on,
right.
We'll give you one of these email things, and then you'll be able to make
us. Well, you have quite a robust
Instagram
page, don't you?
I could Instagram it.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
When you went on Netflix, you got a lot of attention.
You know what? And I just want to, I'm going to wrap this up because clearly you're afraid to, but I'm just going to say one episode, we are going to talk about the rumor that Andy Ricker closed Pock Pock, not for any culinary reasons, but because he was making so much money as a cat influencer on Instagram that he didn't have to worry anymore. Those photos of Jamuk and Brindy and the other cats that he have, they have a big following. I think his, like, Andy's reach with those cats, my Instagram reach is paltry. So we are going to talk about that. And then we're also going to plumb some of those, like, Shanghai tunnels of Portland food.
I thought we were going to end on a high note.
That's pretty good, right? Don't you think that's a teaser? That's a cliffhanger.
To talk about Andy's cats?
No, I think you pulled the wrong thing out of that. But we're going to, like I said, we're going to get better. On
the hotline.
The hotline. There we go. I mean, I don't think it was much.
Say hi to your mom.
Mom, please. Did you listen to the end? All right. Next week. Thank you very much.